We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
What's trending?
All right, let's check in on the hot topics. Trending.
Number one on What's Trending, the Royals take the opening series of the 2021 season, 2-1 over the Rangers. They did fall yesterday, unfortunately. Brady Singer with a rough go, his worst outing in his young career in terms of runs given up. But the Royals back at it this afternoon, 3:10 first pitch against the Cleveland Indians right here on 610 Sports Radio. Vern's On Deck show gets going at 2 o'clock. We'll hand it right off to Vern as soon as we get off the air. And, of course, we had Whit Merrifield join us for the Whit Merrifield show in the 11 o'clock hour, and obviously feeling good coming off an opening weekend series win.
I know it's a bad team, but still, you got to feel so much better.
You don't apologize for winning a series. Absolutely not.
Oh, no. Never apologize for winning a series. Look, you know, you'd be 110-win team if you won every series in a year.
Yeah, and after What's Trending, we'll talk more about what we saw because there was plenty of positives. And yeah, starting pitching has to be better. I think everybody knows that. But I also look at, certainly with Brad Keller, even more than Brady Singer. Brad Keller, all right, that's not going to be something we see very often for Brad Keller. Brady Singer, he's still trying to learn really what it's going to take to be at the majors, right? I mean, he looked good the first two innings, then lost some of his command. He couldn't get it back, and was a rough go for Brady Singer, giving up six runs, five earned.
Those starts are going to happen in your life. Yeah. I wouldn't be I don't think they're going to be the number one offense in baseball, which they were for the first three games. I don't think going to be the worst rotation in baseball like they were for the first three games. Usually, as we well know, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Next up on What's Trending, National Championship for College Hoops is tonight. By the way, could not come at a better time because we're actually starting to get good college basketball games that are worth watching finally. There'd been a slog of not very good basketball, not well officiated basketball, but over these last few weeks, we've actually gotten a chance to see several good games, not just the ones I'm talking about where like Michigan's playing in like 50-50 slogs. Actual high-scoring basketball games with high-level play back and forth. It is Baylor and Gonzaga tonight, the matchup versus what has been consensus, the two best teams in college basketball all season long. Obviously, Baylor blew out in their game, and it took the buzzer beater against UCLA for Gonzaga to win. But I got to think that this game should be close. Vegas has got that number around 5 here recently, but this is legitimately the first time I could think of you got the exact matchup you wanted. Since maybe Kansas and Memphis. These are clearly the two best teams in the country.
All year, and we were robbed of the matchup earlier in the year, unfortunately, due to COVID and then the cases.
Actually,
that
I'm not
Baylor
mad
had,
about so. It now. Now I'm kind of happy we didn't get it because now I get it in the most important game.
Now that you have it, yeah, I guess. I mean, although if that was a classic in December, I would say, man, let's do it one more time in March.
If it were double overtime regular season game.
It was an unbelievable win for Gonzaga. Obviously, Jalen Suggs with the shot that he was able to make. So that one late tonight, little college basketball. It's perfect. The Royals have an afternoon game, so there's no conflict. The Royals will be done by, 6 o'clock? And then, of course, you've got the
game
national
should start by midnight.
Yeah, the national time.
My only complaint.
It won't be over till midnight. And then one shutting moment, Cody's favorite thing. So he's gonna come in tomorrow and complain about it, but it's amazing.
You see, that's where you're mistaken. I actually don't come in the show to complain about it. I just care nothing about it. And then all of these people want to wax poetic about it, like, did you catch one shining moment?
Can't wait.
It
can't
like
wait
touched tonight. My heart. And
can't
I'm like,
wait.
Ugh. See, now I have to come on the other side because it's terrible.
I can't wait.
The music's terrible. It doesn't mean anything. It does
nothing.
You're
not a Luther Vandross fan, huh?
It moves me zero emotionally. Sir, there's no way you care about one shining moment. There's no way you've ever bothered to watch
neither
that.
Of you, neither one of you are big college basketball guys, though, either. Man. I mean, like,
I watched a lot of college basketball growing up, and I still didn't care about One Shining Moment. Huh.
When I was younger, I thought it was cooler than it is, probably.
I can't wait to watch it. But most likely, I'll just watch it on YouTube the next day. Depends how the game goes.
Won't even do that.
Next up on What's Trending, the Masters this week. It is Masters week down at Augusta, Georgia, Thursday. It all gets underway. And Brooks Koepka, it seemed nearly impossible that he had any shot at playing in the Masters because of the knee surgery that he had
months.
Less than a month ago. Some reports had 5 or 6 month recovery. He claims he's given it a go this week and he will play in the Masters. Now, we'll find out for sure on Wednesday and Thursday, and Wednesday practice round and Thursday opening round. But Dustin Johnson is actually the favorite to win the Masters at 9-1. Bryson DeChambeau 10-1, and Jordan Spieth suddenly with the third best odds to win the Masters. That is because a lot of momentum in his way. He's been playing the best golf in 5 years. He won the tournament this past week in the Texas Open. There, yes, it's a friendly course and everything for him, but still, it's been a while since he's looked this good
Four
and
heads
into the Masters. Yeah, 2017. Yeah.
This is a really good example. Like, Spieth is a great example of why it'll only be Tiger Woods once. Like, Koepka will go on a run, man. DeChambeau will go on a run. Spieth went on a run. Rory went on a run. Golfers will get hot, win some tournaments, win some majors over the course of a few years, Gold. Spieth hadn't won in 4 years. Tiger, during his heyday, did not come anywhere close to not winning for 4 years. Not winning a major for 4 years was weird for him for a while. But Spieth is very good, and I'm looking forward to the Masters as always. Although it feels like it's too soon. Because it happened so quick, I'm like,
I mean,
gotta
get it back on schedule here.
No, I'm good. It feels like, I feel like I wasn't expecting it this soon.
That's still a bucket list item. We've been fortunate to go to some pretty cool sporting events, but that's on the short list now.
Same.
Needs to happen at some point.
If you ever win that lottery, holla at your boy. Your brother-in-law probably want to go, I guess. I enter the lottery every year. I never win it.
Just got to keep getting top shot cards. We got, slowly but surely.
We'll
work our way up.
Pay for our Masters trip that way. Next up on What's Trending, you might have seen a scary moment in the Sunday night baseball game last night where Shohei Ohtani got dialed up at home plate as he was trying to cover the plate. Well, reports are he is fine after that collision at home plate, which is great because he should be baseball's most interesting man. Look, I love Whit Merrifield. He's just on the show. He's a tremendous player. He doesn't throw 100 and hit balls 115 miles an hour.
Although Witt did say he's got that zero ERA right now.
That's better than Ohtani's.
And a minor league save under his belt, too.
I kind of hope. I want to see him in a game now this year, right? Like Gordon pitched in a game last year.
I mean, no, I don't.
Come on, man. There's going to be a blowout. This is baseball.
I would rather not have 15 runs against, and they're like, you know what? Screw it.
Maybe it's 15 runs for. They don't usually pitch
that way. It's usually the opposite. The only position player I've seen in person pitch was Tony Pena Jr. back. When was that? Oh, gosh. 06?
Probably around that time. Yeah. Is Tony Pena Jr. on the mound?
Yeah, my goodness.
Position player pitching, man.
But the sound of that home run from Shohei Ohtani last night, like the very next inning, like as well.
Why didn't I take him first overall? How high did he go on our fantasy draft?
I'd have to look.
He pitches and hits. What was I thinking?
Like that, I mean.
Oh.
Like.
Oh, and first pitch, crush it!
If you knew nothing about baseball, you knew that ball was smoked, right?
Yeah, the noise.
Like you just
off
never followed baseball. You're like, ooh, sounded like it was hit really hard.
Nuts. Lastly, on What's Trending, Aaron Rodgers hosting Jeopardy this week. I think for 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Of course, it was always it's been well documented at this point in time. Big fan of Jeopardy, and so he said he's been studying what he's calling game tape of the late and great Alex Trebek. And so they've been doing different celebrity hosts, and it's something that Alex or Aaron Rodgers taken very seriously. So kind of cool to check out.
He said he wouldn't even rule out making it a permanent gig. There have been some surprise retirements of this year. Could you imagine if Aaron Rodgers retired in a year to become the full-time host of Jeopardy?
Mike Florio had a story about that. He's like, could Aaron Rodgers retire?
No.
No, he's not retiring.
How much did Alex Trebek make? I bet he could get paid more to do Jeopardy than
Aaron Rodgers could do it when he actually does retire. But I guess it's one of those gigs once you have it. Like if you're
dude, you could make that money.
That's
Alex Trebek's average salary for Jeopardy his final year was $19 million.
Yeah. That's more than he would make stepping into a booth to call a game.
Absolutely it is.
He's not retiring from football though to do that. Like
by the way, from 913, someone said they made $40 off their common KD card this morning. Top shot making us all rich.
That's right.
We got some comic cards open this
Wednesday
week.
We will have, well, we may not be able to open until Thursday, but Wednesday we should get some more packs to open up on the air. Keep an eye on that. That is what's trending here on Cody and Gold. We're 20 minutes away from your next chance at $1,000 in our national cash contest. And also on the text line, someone says, Cody, you're telling me you never played NCAA basketball on the PS3? Win the title? You didn't experience your throat swell and tear well up in your eyes seeing your team win the title?
Nope. Okay. UMKC's never won a title.
They're talking about on the video game. I told you, NCAA basketball back in the day, you take the ruse of the tourney for the first time. It was a great feeling. Great feeling. Long grind. Got to grind out those games.
I just think it just doesn't do anything for me. But we talked about this before. You're more of the like...
I enjoy
you and Bob and maybe somebody on the afternoon shows. Like one person per show is the like... I get goosebumps over watching emotional stuff.
Like when we played the Clark Hunt speech that he gave before...
Maybe I'm dead on the inside.
Maybe so.
I cry at Pixar movies, so I'm not that dead. There is like a line. I get teary-eyed at those. So I'm not like completely dead on the inside. Just one shining moment doesn't do it. Doesn't move the needle.
Like, look, there's nothing that'll beat the year when your team wins it. Like 08 one shining moment obviously is way different than 2021 one shining moment. But there's something like this. The Luther. Well, I don't know if they're are they back to Luther Vandross now?
I don't know.
Or are they? They went away. Stick with Luther. Just stick with him on the one shining moment, please. We were talking Royals baseball during what's trending though, because an opening weekend you certainly don't apologize for winning an opening series no matter who the opponent is, and most people expect the Rangers to stink this year, and I think we got a glimpse of that with their bullpen, as a matter of fact. But the Royals offense. You can say that, yeah, they're not going to be a number one offense in baseball throughout the season. We know that, and I don't think you can rely on the bottom of the order the way they did. Your starting pitching has to get better, but still, you win a series, open up a season, and you do it with Hunter Dozier and Mondesi not available, at least Dozier for one of the games, or two of the games, I should say. He was only available on opening day because he had the thumb injury that we're still talking about and seeing where that progresses. But the opening weekend... Like the bullpen, Kyle Zimmer, for example, 3 scoreless innings on yesterday, and then you see what he was able to give you on opening day, which was 2/3 of an inning. Like there were plenty of positives to take away. It's just I think you have to pinpoint what do you think is actually going to be more everlasting out of what we saw from the weekend. Like, look, Michael A. Taylor, fun as hell to watch. The defense, I think, is everlasting. The bat. Okay, the guy's not going to hit 30 home runs this year.
They claim to have fixed some things in his swing, but look, I've heard that enough over the years of covering and watching baseball. I'd like to see it a little longer.
So, like, there's things that I would say. I don't think Brad Keller's going to be that, okay? We know that. I don't think Brady Singer's going to be that. I don't know about Kyle Isbell yet. Like, we could find out he is a constant in the lineup and a steady bat. He's not in the lineup today, but that's just because they're going up against a lefty. So, you're trying to pinpoint what can you take away that actually carries through. I think Mike Matheny essentially already said what he thinks is going to carry through, which is that they're never out of a baseball game already. And having that mindset, 2 games out of your first 3, you were down. You'd prefer, and he even said kind of jokingly after the game yesterday, like, you know, we can take a lead early too. That would be just fine with that as well. Like but the fact that they've come back from deficits, their first 2 out of the 3 is a nice thing to have in your pocket.
If you take everything back to its normal level, though, the way they started this opening weekend is exactly who I thought the Royals were. Their strength was the bullpen. They had a lot of arms, a lot of options, a lot of high-velocity throwers back there that was going to make it difficult for opposing teams to do it. And they had to throw quite a bit. So it turns out, over the 3 games, and posted a 2.20 ERA. So even if it, like, you know, they let up a few more runs, they are a very good bullpen. I feel like I get that sense already.
Mm-hmm.
The offense is improved. Okay, let's not maybe say it's the best offense. You know, like, it's the best offense in baseball. I don't think they're there yet. But the offense is clearly improved. They're a deeper lineup. And we're saying that without Hunter Dozier and without Mondesi, they were still able to score a decent amount of runs over this week. And now they had Dozier for the first game. But they were able to put runs together, partially because Taylor and Isbell and Nicky Lopez contributed 7, 8, 9, because if you're going to get contributions there, you're going to win most games. But because the top of the order looked like it's stable and they have some guys who can hit the ball. The starting pitching was a concern, and it still is a concern. Maybe not a 12-6 ERA concern, but I'm worried about it. I feel like the opening weekend gave me a little bit of the taste of everything I felt like I knew about this team.
Yeah, and like today, Danny Duffy's on the bump, and like, can he get off to a nice start? I mean, I think this is, you know, you really use one of your starters here for the first time, give you a really solid out. Like, I was fine with what Mike Minor gave him after he settled in and had a rough start to the game. Like, overall, I would take that most times from Mike Minor. Like, you would prefer not a 4-run deficit, right? But overall, what he gave you, which was got you into, what, the 6th inning, I believe, on Saturday, and ended up being a winning effort. He got the win. He's the only starter to get a win so far in the early going for Kansas City. But you're right about the lineup. what we were wondering too from Carlos Santana, what we were wondering to see, would that lean over, or would that also help some of the other guys in the order? Carlos Santana, it's like you can almost put him in the spot where you know what you're getting at every at bat. Like you're almost there, sure, where you know he's going to be patient, but also he's going to get on base. That's something he's done throughout his career. We've seen it in the early going from him. Whit Merrifield is going to be as steady as anybody in the entire lineup. He's leading off for a reason. He's your best hitter on the team. Guy also hit two home runs over the weekend. Like you know that what you're getting from him. Carlos Santana is just fun to watch because I feel like if you're also if you're frustrated ever where you're like, man, that, you know, either guys are being too aggressive or whatever, you know he's going to kind of like steady things out a little bit in that order. Like he's going to be the patient guy in the order, maybe when other guys are being too aggressive.
You want to know the most telling stat on that? The most like warm your heart with fuzzy feelings that Carlos Santana's in the order? The Royals in two of the first three games had more walks than they did strikeouts. Say, okay, big deal. That probably happens in baseball games, right? The Royals last year in 60 games did that twice. Twice. They did it two of the first three games this year. That's a significant improvement. Like, they're just going to walk more. And I know that they're free swinging Adalberto Mondesi. He's not in the order at this rate. But like coming into the year, this was the first time, I swear to you, we were joking about like the worst free agent signings in Royals history. And people were talking about Omar Infante, or they were talking about Gilmesh, who, I don't know, I always have a hard time rating him in there because he just gave
the fact he gave the money back
$11 million in the final year.
Unbelievable.
I'd be less critical of him because of that. But you know, like, you know, all the names, like in all the free agents they've targeted and all the years they've gone after some draftable players and some of the guys who've come up, on base percentage has never seemed to matter to them. And it's like just having one guy in the middle of the order who has been a high on base percentage guy his entire career and a take 9, 10, 11, 12 pitch guy his entire career feels like it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, we saw now, you know, he gets to go up against his former team this afternoon in Cleveland for a quick two-game series. I'm just, this week, look, we can't overreact after three games, and I certainly am not going to overreact after a two-game series and then a three-game series against the White Sox later in the week. But, you know, the Rangers are not supposed to be a very good baseball team, so I want to see what they do against Cleveland and what they do against the White Sox. Like, nobody's projecting the Royals to, as you said, be the best offense in baseball, but I'm curious to see how is their plate approached when the competition does step up, which tonight it will, or this afternoon it'll start, and then the White Sox are projected to be one of the best teams in baseball. It's very early on in the season. We know plenty of teams will have terrible starts and hot starts, and then by July they turn out to be a much different baseball team than what we thought they were in April. Like, losing three games in a row in April is the same as losing three in a row in July, but everybody freaks out if you do it in April, right?
Well, because April's ruined Royal seasons for 30 years.
I'm just talking in general.
Sure. I don't know how other markets handle it. For this market, it makes sense.
I think in most markets, though, like, I mean, in Boston, they're freaking out. They lost three to the Baltimore Orioles, who are supposed to be trash.
Don't trade league MVP.
In Boston, right. But what I'm saying is, like, Boston, I don't know how good they're going to be this year, but if they lose three in a row in July, people don't freak out the same way they do in April. No, in Kansas City's case, we went through the last 5 years of the month of April and where the Royals have at. So the fact that they won a series right out of the gate is a huge step in the right direction as well.
They started 3-10 last year.
Yeah.
They almost can't start that bad.
Like, don't say that. But
I said almost.
Don't say that. Don't say
is
that.
Is this like when I said you almost can't lose this bet?
I don't say that. But that's exactly what it was. Mid-show NCAA tournament.
You lose this bet on Texas or whoever it was.
Florida. It was Florida.
Florida.
I had Florida, what was it, -3. And
you actually won that bet.
And had to wait till overtime because you jinxed it. But yeah, that is what happened.
If you won the bet, did I jinx it?
We all witnessed what happened.
A buzzer
we
beater.
All witnessed what happened. I very easily could have lost the bet because of that. But no, like, feels good out of the gate though. What you saw from the Royals, a lot of positives to take. And you know, I'm curious though if they can get Dozier back by Thursday, because otherwise, if they don't think he's back by Thursday, then you got to wonder at that point if he is going to end up on the IL. And so at that point, then what does that mean for your depth at that position? We were talking earlier about Bobby Witt Jr. He's now at Northwest Arkansas. He's at that alternate training site, which was not the original plan for him, but it's because the sheer numbers and the taxi squad needs because of where you're at. I mean, you're already without Mondesi in your order. So, yeah, can you get through this week and make sure you get Dozier back in the next few days? 500 or better by the end of this week against a step up in competition? Absolutely. Like, that, feel pretty good about that.
Divisional opponents, yeah. White Sox and Indians.
And the White Sox
are going to be motivated because they just lost 3 out of 4 over the weekend.
Yeah, and the White Sox, we all know, were extremely a pain in the butt against the Royals last year.
Although they're getting hurt a little bit too. Yeah, like they lost Eloy Jimenez, and then they had
Anderson. Yeah,
they had Anderson, Tim Anderson
running to first. I don't know, hammy or something came up. I don't know if I've seen any updates. He's day to day.
Well, so they essentially lost their three and four hitters over the last 2 weeks.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought up the White Sox game last night. Did you the national broadcast was really trying to pump up Tony La Russa throughout. I watched the whole Sunday Night Baseball game because it was the Shohei Ohtani show.
Stock or something in it?
But in the bottom of the fourth inning, they spent the whole entire inning just fluffing up Tony La Russa there in terms of how good of a manager he is and everything.
This is really what you're pointing out is pointing out the problem baseball has. Rather than you should be so sick of hearing the name Ohtani in that broadcast. It'd be like when they were talking about Bumgarner in the 2014 World Series. You should be tired of the way that they are talking about that player because he was doing incredible things. And instead, they spent an entire inning talking about a 80-year-old manager. Like, what are we doing here? It's just unnecessary. Like, that's the way I look at it. Like, they just don't know the right person to promote. They should be promoting an interesting young player for the White Sox. And instead, they're like, look at La Russa. Still got it.
And in fairness, they were talking up.
No, because my managers in baseball never promote them.
They were talking up Mercedes, who 8 for 8 is. Yeah. They were talking
about. Never talk about La Russa. Is there any baseball manager that moves the needle? Like, NFL coaches move a needle. Does any baseball manager move a needle? Maybe you wanted to offer Madden to me at some point. Maybe.
Pinella at one point.
But I mean, it's not. They don't even let those guys get tossed anymore. Yeah, I love Ned, but a national broadcast perspective, from a national perspective, if you want to be a fan of baseball, you're not going to become a fan of baseball just because Ned is the manager of that team.
Yeah, I mean, they
small amount.
They did a good job last night of trying to highlight Shohei Ohtani. I mean, they talked him up
endlessly, and they should.
And he was incredible. He was absolutely incredible last night as the Angels ended up winning, actually in walk-off fashion late last night against the Chicago White Sox. So we'll get back to some Royals baseball coming up after random question of the day, which is about 15 minutes or so away. But the buzzer beater on Saturday night, man, I keep going back to that because Jalen Suggs now is a name that we're never going to forget for Gonzaga. And he hit the buzzer beater in overtime. It was headed to second overtime. And, you know, the longer the game goes, the odds of Gonzaga winning, you would have thought would have gone up, right? They're still the better, they're more talented team than UCLA. So like if you're a UCLA, the fact that they were able to come back from a 5-point deficit in overtime to even make it to where they could tie it with 3 seconds.
Was incredible.
But then Jalen Suggs hits a buzzer beater and he gets the shot to fall. This is what it sounded like on UCLA radio.
Juzang with 8, with 7, gets to the elbow, a floater, line drive, no, gets his own rebound, scores off the glass, 3.3 to go. Here's Suggs at midcourt, 2-1, a 32-footer. Oh my goodness, he banked it in. Gonzaga has won the game.
Wow.
Cry in your pillow. Unbelievable. Suggs hit a runner. Bank shot going home. The Bruins are going home.
The cry in your pillow is a great line from the UCLA broadcast on IMG Radio Network there. Where does that one rank, though? So
first.
Go ahead.
Number one.
Number one?
I cut you off.
Number one?
Number one.
It's not number
one. Give
me
your answer.
It's not number one. I was going to say our boss, Speck, he tweeted out. I actually think his list was pretty damn close to what I would have in. It's the issue is I have to remember what game it was, when it was, which is why if anybody wants to throw out like Tyus Edney, as great as a moment that was for UCLA against Missouri, trust me, I love the moment. Love it.
Why gotta be like that?
For the Bruins of UCLA to get into the Sweet 16, knocked out last year in the first round by Tulsa. They don't want to lose this one. Edney going the distance.
Great play, great moment, but it was a second round game, so I cannot.
That's a horrible defense.
There's no way Edney can be higher than what we saw last night with Suggs. But number one, it still has to be something that happened to win a national championship. I got to go back to Villanova, North Carolina, and Jenkins.
Gonna go length of the court with Archie Diacono. 3 seconds at midcourt. Jenkins gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
For the championship. That's number one. Leitner's going to be behind Suggs for me on this one. It's Jenkins, it's Suggs, it's Leitner, then Edney.
Suggs, then Jenkins. And that the Leitner
one. Can you put Suggs above? It's 1-1 the national championship.
I liked
man.
The game better. I liked the shot.
The question's not
better.
The game, it's the shot and what the shot meant. Shot was to get to a title game. The other won you a national championship. Unbelievable.
Look, obviously there's some weight in that regard. Ooh. That's why Tyus Edney would be below Christian Leitner's game because that was Elite Eight to Final Four.
Yep.
Like, I understand that. Also, Leitner's, like, in retrospect, like, his is more of a... It was a product of the era that I think we blow it up as much as you do. It's a good shot. It's not as good as Suggs last night. If those were both Final Four games, it would still be Suggs' shot. I just think it's Suggs. Name of the player, the Text teams lines. Are on yeah, the line, yeah. An undefeated team yeah. for Gonzaga. I'll take Suggs.
Text line mentions one. I don't think it's top three. Look, again, you take off the, like, as a KU fan, it's number one. But, like, the Chalmers three, it's not, it's number one is in my fandom world because of what it meant for KU. But if we're putting it in perspective, like, that's like a top five or six overall in the entire tournament.
It's a top 10 tournament moment. Because he yeah. hit it to tie a game to go overtime.
Yeah, to me, it's probably like it's probably number five in terms of overall. Yeah, yeah, if you're a KU fan, of course it's your number. I mean, yeah, I would hope it's something you'll never forget. But Suggs is a legend now because of it. As I said earlier, it's just a shame that he's not able to profit off of that right now. Hopefully in a year or so, college players will have that opportunity. Coming up next, though, your next chance at $1,000 international cash contest. And is this year more important if you're Veach in the draft or is the next couple?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Back in, it's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you. Royals baseball coming your way at 3:10. Vern's on deck show at 2 o'clock right here on your home for the Royals. 610 Sports Radio. Right now, though, it is your next chance at $1,000 in our national cash contest.
Your dash for the cash code word this hour. I didn't even give you any letters ahead of time. Dollar. D-O-L-L-A-R. Dollar. Text that over to 72881. You could be the winner in the national cash contest. For complete rules, go to 610sports.com. Message and data rates may apply. Cash contest is powered by BetQL. That BetQL's proven data and analytics help you become a better. Download the BetQL app today. That was dollar, D-O-L-L-A-R, to 72881.
Next chance coming up 1 hour from now at 1:30. Also, right now, you can go to 610sports.com. If you click on contest, you'll see an opportunity if you want to check out the latest production from the Lyric Opera, partnering with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Baseball, a musical love letter. It's scheduled for May 7th through the 14th over at the Lyric Opera's Production Arts Building, and they're partnering up with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. If you want a chance to get some tickets to that, you can register to win a pair of tickets over at 610sports.com. Just click on the contest page. We're about 10 minutes away from the random question of the day, but when you look at the draft for Kansas City coming up, it's hard for me to imagine this not being the most important draft for Brett Veach already, yes, in his tenure, but also even a year, two, 3 years from now. The reason why I say that is we're talking about the need still for a left tackle to protect the guy you just gave a record-setting deal to an offseason ago, $500 million to one Patrick Mahomes. So, yeah, in the short period of time, I think it's a no-brainer. If you just said, hey, is this the most important draft yet for Brett Veach? The answer to that, I think, should universally be yes. Now, if you want to go further out and say, are we still going to be saying that 2 or 3 years from now? I'm not asking if it's going to be the most successful 2 or 3 years from now. I hope this is viewed as the most successful because they got 8 draft picks. This is a year where they still need a left tackle, even if they sign a veteran. This is a year where perhaps they also find their number two wide receiver of the future. So I think this absolutely is the most important draft and will be viewed as one of the most important drafts 1 or 2 years from now as well. The question is it viewed as the most important draft that they succeeded in or a failure? That's something time will tell. But man, when you're trying to find your left tackle of the future and maybe your number two wide receiver for the future, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on it.
That's why it's more important for the years following this one than it is for this year. For this year, obviously, they're looking to improve their team. But if they rolled out the exact unit that they have, right? They just rolled out the exact same unit that we see right now. No additions. None. None in the draft. They'd still be a Super Bowl contender.
With no left tackle? You sure?
Yes. Rimmers would be the left tackle in the hypothetical scenario in which I'm tossing out. I'm not saying I'd like that situation. That's insane. I obviously wouldn't prefer that to be the case. I'm just saying they would still be a Super Bowl contending team. It's really more important for what happens in the future. For a team that doesn't overly play rookies, and look, I think they're going to have to play some on the offensive line this year. And I think if they find the right wide receiver, that guy should get a good look to play the kind of snaps Sammy Watkins has played over the last few years. But I've watched the way they've played these players. The defense is mostly put together. I think the guys that they might be missing at corner or linebacker or defensive line could still be found in the free agency pool, not through the draft gold. I think this draft is more important for 2022, 23 than it is for 2021. Obviously, they're in the middle of a Super Bowl run.
But that's
like a chance to go to Super Bowls, that does matter. But the team is so good even without the draft.
They are, but you said it. You're like, it might be better for 2022, 2023. But that's what your success looks like on the O-line in 2023, 2022 could have a lot on what you do at pick 31 in this year's draft.
Sure.
Like, ideally, if you take the left tackle at pick 31, whether he starts this year or not, he's your left tackle for the next 4 years after that. And so if you're able to hit on that, at least four years after that, like that could be viewed back. Like if the Chiefs find their left tackle of the future, if they get a guy that starts as many games as Eric Fisher starts at left tackle in this year's draft,
you don't have to solve that problem for a long time.
That's a massive win. I get what you're saying, that this year's team is still stacked. They are, you're right, a contender. I think the difference is if they didn't do anything else, they're a contender, not the favorite. Like, you know,
sure.
I know, look, in fairness, right now, Vegas still says they're the favorite, but that's with the expectation.
They're assuming some things.
That they're not done. And they're not done. Right, they're obviously not done, and I know today they made a couple of the signings official. We knew about Austin Blythe, he's the center. It's now official today, and Michael Burden, that's official today. As the Chiefs just sent out a tweet with the social media imaging and all that kind of stuff, and I believe a press release, if I'm not mistaken, too. So, like that's done. But there's other moves to come even before we get to April 29th in the NFL draft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need it for this year. They need some more help this year, but it's just. It's like all the contracts, man, they start kicking up in the next couple of years. And I know the cap's going to go way up too, but it's like there's just so much talent on this team. It's more about what's going to happen years down the road, right, to me. Because I just think that if you look at Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Pat, you know, like Mahomes, toss him out. But Matthew and Thornhill, they already have a lot of really good starting players. They're not looking for that many starters. They're looking for a starting left tackle and a starting wide receiver. Then they're looking for some future starters at some other positions. Like, I just think that, and it is important for this year. It's certainly going to make them more of a Super Bowl favorite, like you mentioned. But it's more important going forward that they're safe at those positions than it is in even
sure,
this
but
season.
I guess we're saying the same thing without, like, you're talking about it's more important 2023.
You're saying they got it good this year because then I'll know they're good for the following years. I'm saying, like, if they took a year to develop because that's the end of picks
exactly.
They took, they could focus more on players who project to be better in 2 years than a guy who projects to be good this year, in
my
opinion.
Well, other than left tackle and the wide receiver spot, I'm with you. I mean, I think that's why two of their first picks, to me, should be left tackle and wide receiver. And then from there, you can get some developmental guys, including a mid-round center. That your center that you brought in this year, and Blythe, probably a one-year stopgap, but maybe you draft the center of the future in your third or fourth round or so. So, yeah, I think we're saying somewhat the same thing. We're 2023, 2024, more important in terms of having players on rookie contracts and cheaper deals because of when time comes and needing the development and all that. But to me, you can answer some of that a little bit this year. Takes care
of the
problems.
If you get him this year, you do take care of future problems.
But that's why I think this year's draft is so important. We'll see as time goes on, obviously, and how we view this draft will be predicated on what does pick number 31, assuming they actually pick at 31, what's that player turn out to be more than anything else? Like last year's draft, we know L'Jarius Sneed was the absolute steal, appears.
Absolutely.
Of the draft. We'll find out this year a lot more about Willie Gay Jr. and how we view that pick. Right now, it's a complete question mark still. We don't know. I can't judge him either way. I don't think nobody's.
And Lucas Niang is a complete question
Niang
mark.
That didn't play a snap. So we'll know a lot more about how we feel in the 2020 draft class in year two from Clyde. That goes for Clyde as well.
Yeah. If you, by the way, want to just guess who you think Kansas City will take in the draft, do we have a deal for you? You can win a full-sized autographed Tyreek Hill helmet just by going to our website, 610sports.com, and entering to win our draft predictor. It's open today. It's all the way up through the draft. If you go to 610 Sports, you can enter who you think will win the 31st overall, who they'll take with the 31st overall pick. If you are correct, you will be entered to win a full-size Tyreek Hill helmet, which is obviously not so bad.
Yeah, nice autograph on there.
If they trade out. So you're like, well, what happens if they trade out? Everyone's entered to win. So make a pick. Choose a player. If you guess correctly, you'll have a chance to win the grand prize of a signed Tyreek Hill helmet. I don't know what more you need than that.
Yeah, I'm jealous. You know I'm into the memorabilia stuff.
Signed Tyreek Hill helmet up with your other stuff? I
put it next to the Mahomes one. Yeah, I'm a little jealous of this.
Do the contest rules say you can't win?
Yes, they do. They do. They literally do. Doesn't say specifically Alex Gold cannot win, but it pretty much does. Yes, employees are not allowed. Yes.
What about Alex Silver? Sure you can't create
any employee or close family members? That's how our contest rules work.
What do they determine
you
close family members?
Like your kid,
like my
wife
or my kid? What about my brother?
Yeah,
brothers excluded.
I believe so.
Yeah. Tough living.
Yeah,
and just have somebody you know who's not a member of your family
and not a Chiefs fan, I guess, because
that's under good luck. The Someone understanding, you'll get it.
There you
if
go.
They win.
There you go. You got to get the pick right, first of all, too.
Right pick, now, offensive line's a pretty good guess.
Pick 31's tough, too, to predict, though, man. That's a tough one. It's not like you got pick 2 in the draft where you got a good feeling. Pick 31, a lot of things can happen. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we may have thought they were going to take a running back, but if you would have picked Clyde at 32 last year.
Certainly going to enter Bateman. Rashad Bateman, pick 31.
Rondale Moore.
There you go. So, yeah, make sure you head to 610sports.com. We'll keep reminding you, but you have, obviously, between now and, as Cody said, up until the start of the draft to select who you think the Chiefs are going to select. They're at pick number 31.
Random question.
The random question of the day brought to you by the Windows Source of Kansas City. By the way, happy to report. New windows in. Yes.
They looked awfully fancy. I saw the
they
photo.
They do look
they
fancy.
They look very nice.
Very excited about it.
Is it quiet? Is your house like just dead silent now?
Very quiet. Yeah. Well, other than the toddlers in the inside. But when they're asleep, noticeably quiet. And I had the projector screen out last night. Speaking of which, I got a question for you after we get to the random question, Serta, about what protocol is for that. Just keep that in mind.
Okay.
But first, for you, Gold, Serta, and over on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-576-7610. Just simply put, do you think the new Space Jam looks good? Because I think it looks bad.
So the acting of LeBron James seems really cheesy and terrible, okay? But remember, this is a kids' movie. It's catered to kids. All I care about, you guys know, is I need to know, and I didn't get a clear answer in the trailer that came out for Space Jam 2 over the weekend. Is the first opening scene going to be the highlight? Am I going to get my recreation of the MJ?
Well, they're going to recreate something
like
from
is
it.
LeBron Jr. going to shoot some hoops in the backyard and then they cut to a highlight montage with great music, great soundtrack of LeBron James? If we get that, then the movie's made for me. That's all I need. The other stuff, the CGI, I get it. It seemed like a little too, like, I know they needed to modernize Space Jam, it seemed like a little too much. Like I would have been fine with a little bit of the classic.
Oh, really?
Some of it was a little too much CGI and too fancy and modernizing it up.
I would say there's more like strict cartoons or like adult cartoons now than I would say just straight like childlike cartoons. And that's why they just CGI and animate everything. So when I saw that part of the trailer, I thought it looked awesome. I thought it was going to be absurd because they made LeBron a cartoon for half the trailer. And so I thought that's what it was going to be. And I was like, oh no, this is going to be awful. But then when they started CGIing everybody, I was like, okay, this is sweet.
It just looks like too much.
Oh, the world
just
looks
too much.
The whole actual game and all of the
that's why
Warner Brothers characters that they put in there, all of that looks incredible.
See, the random characters are fine, but like the game itself with the scoreboard, it seemed way too flashy, like almost complicated. Like there's too much going on.
There's new rules I gotta check.
It's just a trailer, so who knows? Of course I'm gonna watch it either way. I just need the leaked version of the first 5 minutes of the film, and I can tell you if it's great or not. That's all I need.
Tell me if you like it or not.
Just the first 5 minutes.
Based on the first 5 minutes, I don't mind a CGI movie. Obviously, like people complain about that for whatever reason for like Godzilla versus King Kong, and you're like, well, this is insane. That's exactly what this movie's supposed to be. And if you're in Space Jam, and I don't know, the indication is that he is versus like sucked into the wormhole where they're trying to like get him to play. He's more like taken to an alien world to then have to compete in this basketball
game. Well, it's not like in the trailer, they're in an elevator and the kid gets off on the wrong floor and he goes and chases after him and then that's how it starts.
Yeah, I am a little worried about it because this feels like, did you ever see Ready Player One?
No.
Well, it's a fantastic,
I saw the trailer for
that. It's a fantastic movie. That's based off of a book, so a lot of the cultural references are from the book, but the movie, they do this exact same thing where they explore all kinds of like cultural references throughout the film, and it's like an animated, like CGI'd movie. So a lot of them make appearances within the movie. Space Jam 2 kind of feels like a ripoff of that movie, which is most certainly better than whatever Space Jam 2 is going to be.
Yeah, but you take Space Jam 2 for what it's worth at that stage, don't you? If it's like a 70% Ready Player One, a movie you enjoyed, wouldn't you just take that for what it's worth?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I don't have high hopes for Space Jam 2. I just want it to be entertaining.
I just wanted
to see it.
Yeah.
I almost, and I know they're not, they would never do it. I almost just want a modernized version essentially of what we had before, but with LeBron James. And that, it's like, it's, I don't know. Like, is there a scene where the cartoon character's got to go back to MJ, or in this case, LeBron's house, and go grab the shorts, stuff so he's good to play? Like, I need some of that nostalgia from the first one. Remember where they have to like sneak under the carpet and then the kids wake up and they're
to get his North Carolina shorts.
Again, I've watched this movie too many times.
Clearly, you keep describing it like shot for shot. It's like the last time we talked about it. You have watched that movie a lot.
Yeah.
So many
Someone
times.
Says this trailer looks like Shrek with basketball.
Yeah,
people like Shrek.
I still haven't watched the Coming to America sequel.
I haven't either. You know what? I forgot all about it.
I didn't think that it looked good. It's gotten terrible reviews, and it just felt like a cash grab. And I don't really want to. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to just watch a bad movie. Like, if I'm gonna willingly watch a bad movie, there's got to be more going on than it's the sequel to a movie that I loved 20 years ago.
So I do have another question for you specifically, Serta, since I'm curious about something. So I had sent you guys a photo. We knew Serta last year and like put the whole movie screen in his backyard and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we had this, like, we bought that new house in October and we had the enclosed porch. So we thought, I'll put a projector screen back there so I can watch stuff at night during the summer. So I put it back there and, you know, like, I wasn't going to put on a movie right then because, like, the time it was. And so we were watching like an HBO documentary series. So like, fine, maybe not the thing you would normally put on a projector, but it was just like watching TV, but it was gorgeous.
Documentary series on what?
It doesn't, QAnon. So it was, okay. Yeah, so it's intense. So, but it's like, fine, right? Like the sound's not so loud, but their house is to back up to it. And I didn't realize there would be some graphic things that showed up in there. Am I obligated to only watch PG-13 related material if you're putting it on a projector screen, presumably that other people can see from their window? Or is that just on them to close their window if they don't want to see it?
I mean, how long are we talking?
A few minutes.
Minutes?
Minutes. It was a few minutes worth. What's the obligation, sir? What are you putting on the screen? Would you be afraid to show a movie that you thought had some questionable scenes? Like, would you watch Boogie Nights on the projector screen at the back of your house?
No.
Okay. Well, I hadn't seen the episode, so in fairness, I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, you probably should be watching like Eyes Wide Shut or something
like, oh, but I will watch.
You probably shouldn't be watching that in the backyard, you know? Probably shouldn't be doing that.
No, but I'd watch Godzilla versus Kong.
An action movie. What about like John Wick? Too much shooting, no good, or what's the deal?
I was thinking it's more like the violence stuff is fine. You should have the sexual stuff in the backyard on the projector.
So I'm fine with, I don't think John Wick would be that bad, but I would be worried about like too much gun violence in a film because I would just be nervous about being loud and being really disruptive to my neighbors.
It's specifically, well, and like the volume we can easily control, so it's not too bad, but like, it's like my wife was like working on something in the backyard, and I at least know there are some kids that live in the house behind because they were like talking to my kids through the window not that long ago. So like, I know they're back there. So like, I gotta be somewhat mindful moving forward, right?
So now I think we already know you're gonna be viewed as the annoying neighbor now.
I wasn't trying to be.
I think that's where the neighbors are gonna
You know what?
Do you have an HOA?
The next movie I'm putting on, The next time I put something on, I'm gonna put on like a kids movie. I'm gonna cover my grounds.
It might be.
Just straight kids movie.
Why don't you put on Space Jam this weekend? Why don't you put on Space Jam?
If you do a kid's movie, though, then no, other kids in the neighborhood are going to see it, and they're going to want to come hang out at your house and watch movies.
Yeah, and then I've built up some goodwill with some parents, right?
I'm saying you don't want that.
Oh, I see.
Why would you want other people's kids at your house?
I don't know. I mean, so they can be friends with my kids? Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? I mean, they'll probably make their own friends, but...
I guess, but then, like... Yeah, but then every evening... They're going to come knock on the door, see if your kids can come outside and play or if they can play in the backyard and bother you guys.
I haven't experienced that yet because our kids are 2 and 4 yet, but the way you're describing it doesn't sound awesome. I feel like I've got some reservation about the specific way in which you're describing it goes down. I guess let us know in the text line, 913-576-7610. Is that what I should be
text
expecting?
Line said, as long as your projector in the backyard is not showing porn, you're fine. That's where
it
they
was,
drew,
a, it
that's
was just
they,
a show.
That's where they drew the line at.
Yeah, I wouldn't obviously wouldn't go that far.
They drew the line at that. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, the projector in the basement's for the porn.
Yeah, that's your other projector. That's right.
I don't have multiple projectors. Just have the one on the deck. And apparently, I got to be careful to not show the neighbor kids something.
Someone says put on Debbie Does Dallas.
No, he just said I can't. This is the whole point.
Man, oh man. There you go. That's the random question of the day.
Last minute. It was announced this morning via Peter King the NFL's likely to eliminate the week one Monday Night Football doubleheader on ESPN. ESPN would likely have one Monday night game there to open the season and instead televise a Saturday doubleheader in week 18 with the league flexing in two games with playoff implications.
Ooh, I'm fine with that.
I like the two games on Monday night, but you know what? If the trade-off is that I get three straight games, two straight days of football on the back end of the schedule with more important playoff-type matchups, I think that's a good trade. I'd make that trade if that's what it's got to be. I would prefer the double dip on Monday night because that was enjoyable. It's been enjoyable. Although we always end up with the Raiders playing a crappy game usually on that double dip on that Monday night. But yeah, if that's the trade that needs to be made for
I accept
a better
that
primetime matchup in week 18.
That second Monday night football game, does that do anything for you? You're already coming off the high of football.
Yeah, it's still week one though, man. So you're feeling it. Still week one, you're feeling
it. I know,
I'm
still going to get a Monday night football game. I'm just not going to get two of them.
Yeah, but it's more games for you not to miss. Because the NFL's had an unbalanced Sunday. Again, it's like you got to just schedule it around red zone. Like, ideally, hopefully the Chiefs are opening up, by the way, that first Sunday. Hopefully they're on Sunday Night Football to open up the season. That'd be great. Because then you can also enjoy all the games week one on Sunday on red zone. Sunday Night Football is great when your team's on it. When the Chiefs are on Sunday Night Football, besides the game itself, it sets you up for a great Sunday of red zone channel.
As much as it wasn't for the COVID things, I liked Wednesday football and
Tuesday afternoon. Buffalo Bills game at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was kind of nice.
It was so odd. It was very strange.
But it was kind of nice. I like the double dip on Saturday. The Saturday football games late in the season as college goes away, beautiful.
Last minute. Coming up next, we head into the 1 o'clock hour. And has our viewpoint on modesty changed at all when we look at the long-term future from him and KC?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.